everybody. Welcome to the Hop and Brew School podcast. I'm Justin Crosley.
And I'm Nick Ziegler.
And we are back to teach you, help you, connect you with some of the best brewers and hop information so that we can all make better beer. Paraphrased this time.
You did, but it's a totally self-serving enterprise. We just want better hoppy beer that's clean and delicious.
That's right. And why not, after all? Yeah. We drink enough of it.
Well, you know, we are trying to keep people in business.
So. Yeah, that's right. We're just doing our part.
Well, exactly. You know.
Nick Ziegler, it's good to see you again. We got another couple of episodes that we'll be recording and putting out here pretty soon. And today, we're going to be talking about hop profiles and how to blend hops, both how y'all do it at Yakima Chief and how professional brewers and home brewers can do it themselves, right?
Absolutely. And I salute your use of y'all, which is, I think, one of the finest words in the English language.
There's not really another word that is that perfect for almost everything.
I mean it's all y'alls, y'all, yeah. All y'alls better know. You know, it works.
Yeah. There's just not much else you can use beside that one. There's another word we're going to use for today's show, too. We're going to teach folks about clusterfugget.
So yeah, there's this is a hop blend that we're releasing soon.
This is an actual hop blend, by the way.
This is an actual hop blend. Okay. And so I'm going to talk about that in a bit. But yeah. So you know how a lot of the European languages have very strict rules about introducing new words into their lexicons.
Yeah.
So I do apologize to everyone in marketing, but I'm going to get a little bit dirty on this one. Germany, or the German Language Institute, I guess what it was, they came up with two of the words, and they actually adopted two words from English. And they'd never really done this before. And this is a couple of years ago. And because they said, well, there are no words in German that adequately describes these phenomena.
Okay.
And the two words were
yes,
clusterfuck
yeah,
and shitstorm.
Right. Yeah,
it kind of works.
So the thing is, it's not just the Germans. My friends from France love the English language for the same thing that we're good at putting things together to describe something that can't be described any other way.
Exactly. And funny, I think we actually inherited that sort of putting stuff together from the Germans, which is they just kind of layer words together and then
they keep going, by the way.
Put a compactor in there. It's like, yeah. Like if you look at, is it Wissenschaft or Wissenschaft Studio? So like it's these, my apologies to Germans. I'm hopefully getting married to one in 2 weeks unless she just decides that I'm not worth it.
Good luck.
Which is, you know, quite possible. Yeah. But the hilarity of the German language is it's just what they combine is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Well, today we're going to be talking about combining hops for hop blends, and we're going to be talking about different flavors that you're looking for. As you do that, we're going to get down into the weeds like we normally do and just help you out with that. We got to let you know about a couple of things. The actual Hop and Brew School is coming up. I mean, it's not like right around the corner, but before you know it, it's going to be here. It's over Labor Day weekend up in Yakima. And how many years have you guys been doing Hop and Brew School? Do you know?
It's been a while.
I think I've been hearing about it for a long time.
Yeah, it's close to a decade, I think.
Wow.
I'm not really sure. I'm actually fairly new at Yakima Chief, which is,
sure,
you know, again, privilege.
But I can tell.
I actually, you know, I curse. But I've spoken at a couple of them, and we've got a great lineup of speakers this year. We've actually had another request for someone to come speak at it, which is really cool. I can't tell you who that is because we're, you know, working on that one yet. But we've got Vinny Salurzo as our keynote, which is
yeah,
always awesome.
That is awesome.
And we've got some folks from White Labs discussing a bunch of stuff about yeast. So this is not just hops. It's hops and brew school. So we're talking about brewing techniques, you know, other ingredients. We've got some seminars on malt and a sort of a market report on malt coming from, I believe it's Great Western. And we've got just a ton of farm tours. It's going to be really fun. We're feeding y'all. We're definitely
feeding us beer,
lubricating y'all, mm-hmm, with beer. And, good. It's, It's a great time, and
I can't wait. It's starting. The welcome reception is on Friday, August 30th, and then it keeps going all the way through to Monday. You can go to yakimachief.com/events right now and check it out. And I'm really looking forward to it. A bunch of my friends have gone in years past and have always told me to make it. So I think I'm driving the old battle wagon up there, the RV.
We will have a hookup spot for you. It may involve some buckets and an old pump from the brewery, but we will have something for you there.
I was thinking of inviting Vinny to roll up with me. I mean, I know the guy's probably busy as hell, but once I heard he was the keynote, I was like, how cool would a road trip with Vinny be? And we'll just stop at breweries all along the way.
Dude, you should just film that. That would be amazing. Sort of do the Top Gear thing, have a bunch of GoPros in the RV.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Most places in the RV. Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be hilarious.
I'm going to ask him anyway. Because what if I don't? And he was like, dude, I'd have done that in a second. You know? When's the last time he had a good, you know, debaucherous road trip? That's what I'm thinking. He's been building a brewery for the last 3 years, you know?
Dude, Natalie, I'm very sorry that we got to this point, but you are also welcome. We will happily fly you up so that you can just meet them, and we'll give Vinny a day to recover. Yeah, but
it's a good idea. She doesn't need to deal with me.
Just the amount of beer farts, dude.
All right. Also, coming up even sooner, we're going to be at the Homebrew Con in Providence, Rhode Island. Yakima Chief will be there. The Brewing Network will be there. And, of course, we're having our 14th anniversary party. BNA 14 is happening at Fett Music Hall in Providence, Rhode Island. And get your tickets now. Go to thebrewingnetwork.com. Buy your tickets. $35, and then it's all you can drink. You get to hang out with me and Bevo.
And so, hang on. Yep. We talked about this last show, but are we actually invited?
You guys?
Yeah.
You're not just invited. You are our VIP, our sponsors. So Yakima Chief will be on hand in the beginning to hang out, probably give away some goodies, and make sure that you have a special time during our VIP hour. And those tickets are going fast, by the way. They'll be sold out in another week, so go get your VIP tickets if you want that.
And the time will be special. I'll be there. We're not recording until later in that day, so I'll have to be sober. But you get to talk to all of us, and we've got a bunch of personalities, and we're going to be available to actually discuss stuff with y'all. So we're not just going to be there and like hiding in a corner.
That's right.
Scared of crowds. but we've got a lot of people, experts there. We've got our sensory lead there. She's awesome. She's going to be able to help you guys, go through a lot of topics and discuss stuff. We're doing a panel discussion at some point.
We're going to do a few recordings.
It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. So please come on over, come by the booth, and get ready for the party. It'll be a blast.
Yeah, I'm excited. Go to thebrewingnetwork.com and get your BNA 14 tickets. Go to homebrewcon.org if you haven't gotten your tickets to that yet, and come hang out with us. It'll be a good time. All right. I think that's all the updates I have for you folks, so we can dive into the goods now. And so Nick came in and said, listen, I know that we've covered a little bit of this, but I really wanted to get in there and talk a little more about how we blend hops and how you brewers can blend hops. So maybe start us off with some of the principles, like what are the principal components that y'all look at when getting into blending?
Okay, so I'm going to go a little bit historical on this, and we've talked about this before, how our understanding of hop character and our approach to what we define as hop character has changed over the last, it's going to be about 20, 25 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And it really does have to do with the aromatic top notes and the craft beer revolution. But principally, originally, the main component that people were concerned about were alpha acids.
Okay.
And so they would blend to create either a stable alpha acid profile, and that was one of the things that was done with a lot of P90 or T90 hops. So it's taking the whole cone, grinding them up, pelletizing them, or making a concentrated version of that, which is the T45 hops, which is the a standardized alpha. So not stable. Stable is not the right word, but it's standardized alpha, which means that you're always going to get 7, 14, 13, 15, whatever percent it is from that variety, because they remove a certain amount of the leaf fraction.
Okay. So when you say that, they standard like year over year, is that what you mean? That they'll just decide if it's T45 and it's Citra, for example. I don't know.
You wouldn't want to do that to Citra, but yeah.
Give me a hop. Give me
Saz.
Okay. T45 sauce. Year over year over year, it's going to be the same alpha acid.
Originally, the reason it's called T45, it's actually normally about T63 now because agronomic techniques have gotten better and processing has gotten better. But back in the day when they came up with the concept and did the experiments, they needed to make it a T45. So 45% of the original matter. And that brought it up to, I believe, 7%. And so that just happened to do with the lots that they had and the concentration level. And their goal was to create a product that floor brewers could use and just follow the SOP and not have to sort of, you know, do any calculations in the back of a napkin.
Okay.
Because when you're brewing four batches back to back and you've got three in the, you know, you got three in the pipeline, it's hard to do that. You don't have a lot of time.
Sure.
So you want to make sure that everything's weighed out properly and done. So that was a really easy way for brewers to or for hop companies to add value to their brewing partners by providing them something that didn't require a lot of thought.
Consistency.
Well, consistency, and it's also just more of like, okay, just grab bag A, dump in kettle.
Okay.
That was it. You know, it was easy. But that was, you know, just focusing on bitterness. And you'd take different lots and you'd you know, combine them to make sure that you had a standardized alpha level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's actually, you know, sort of one of the reasons that Cryo was different is that we don't actually care about, well, we do care about the alpha, but we primarily judge it based on aromatics.
Okay.
So we actually designed that process.
In the cryo hops.
In the cryo hops, yeah. Mm-hmm. So people have said, that, cryo hops are the same as T45. No, they're not. T45s were created for a very specific purpose, which is standardized alpha acids to add to your hot side to make sure that it helped you, you know, create a more lean profile in your brewery. Basically.
And cryo hops are standardized aromatics?
They're not standardized. Okay. No, so that we celebrate the lot-to-lot variability, and we celebrate that, and that cryo hops are really focused on preserving the aromatic integrity of either that hop
or
those blends of hops. Of hop lots that the brewers have selected. And so this kind of, there's a reason for me to talk. I'm talking about this is bringing us back into the whole blend concept.
Yeah.
So the principal components that you're interested in hops, there's always going to be the alpha acids, and then there's going to be your total oil. Mm-hmm. And then there's the breakdown of the oil within that. And I'm ignoring beta and polyphenol for now, folks. I understand that. We'll get to those in later episodes.
I'm sure someone will correct us before we get to that. We've been getting a lot of feedback lately. No, it's all good.
Okay.
But you've already heard some of it where they're like,
Nick said
one word wrong. So anyway, carry on.
No, actually, honestly, I kind of like that because it keeps me... enraged. I mean, honest.
We love the feedback.
No, it's actually really good. So thank you guys. And, you know, I think we called out and responded to some of that on one of the last episodes. And I hope to do that again. And I would love to do that live at HomebrewCon. Mostly because I'll have a lot of experts behind me to help me. Mm-hmm. But moving on. Anyway, so when you get the total oil percentage, that is your quantity of compounds or quantity of oil that might contribute the aromatics that you're looking for. And so seven years ago, people were looking at total oil as the defining character of what the aromatics were. Well, the problem is that throughout the growth cycle of the plant, depending on when it's harvested, depending on where it's grown, depending on how old the rootstock is, depending on the weather that year, depending on the variety, the proportion of the components within that oil will be very different.
Okay.
So you can get something that's got, you know, you can get something with a 3% oil and you're like, oh, this is fantastic. This is huge. It's going to add so much aroma. Well, yeah, it's going to add a lot of aroma, but is it the aroma that you want?
Okay.
And so you need to explore those hops, rub them, break them down and say, okay, well, hang on. This has this much citrusy. This has this much onion. This has this much pine. And if you're trying to create a beer out of these hops, you can sort of build it from that point. Or if you're trying to flavor match to something, you're looking at, okay, hang on, what are the things that I'm actually getting out of my hops in my current process that I'm trying to recreate and I want to have a consistent beer year on year?
Okay.
And part of that is, I mean, it's hops are, we've talked about this before, hops are an agricultural product.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing our best to make sure that y'all get the best hops for you,
yeah,
that you get to taste and you get to select and you get to have every year. But we have to deal with the vagaries of nature.
What is an example of a blend that I might have heard of that is seeking this purpose?
Okay, so you have I'm going to back up from that concept for a second. So there's a couple different things. There's brewers selecting a blend for their own purposes.
Okay.
There is brand definition, which is that within a brand, we have certain limits there where if things are too far outside of it, we say, okay, that's not actually representative of Citra. We need to look at that field. Perhaps it had undergone different stressors, or maybe there were some off types gone in there, or something happened. You know, maybe it got overheated at some point, whatever. And so we're like, nope, we're not going to release that as Citra. That's not part of our quality thing. We want to make sure that people get what they're expecting.
Okay? I see. Okay.
But within those bars, there's, you know, there's top end and low end for alpha and oil and beta, and
you're not just going to throw away a bunch of Citra because it wasn't in the perfect thing.
Wasn't the perfect thing. We won't necessarily release it as Citra. If it's not perfect, we might extract it. However, if you're doing a big group blend, or if you're doing something, so you know, most of our customers aren't actually able to select our hops because you have to have 5,000 pounds or more of a single variety.
Okay.
To be able to select, and it goes up in that sort of increment. And so if we have 30 breweries in a region
that are all below the 5,000 threshold,
and they all want Citra, and they all, and you know, say, okay, well, hang on, you all together brought this up to 25,000 pounds. Well,
okay.
Let's put you down in front of a bunch of lots and see what you like.
I see.
And so they can create that blend together. And so that's now their Citra as a group.
Got
and
it.
And we will keep that. That's we run that together.
That sounds more fun than picking it by myself.
It can be. It can actually be really problematic, though, because people want different formats.
Yeah.
And also, people want different things. And we've talked about this before. So remember, you used to hate Simcoe because you had a different experience of it than you expected.
Yeah.
And now you don't hate it.
Right.
Because Jeremy showed you the difference between different lots of Simcoe.
Am I allowed to say why I didn't like it, or is that
of course,
because cat piss is why.
Well, you know, one of the major descriptors from the Germans, my apologies to my Bathhaus colleagues, is that Citra tastes like cat piss.
Yeah,
when it's really, really advanced,
right?
And so when it's,
and that's what Jeremy from Lagunitas taught me, because he's like, oh yeah, no, I hear you. Now smell this one.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, well, that smells great. Now I see why everybody likes Simcoe all of a sudden.
Right. Now, here's the thing. When you're using it in beer, we've talked about some of the thiols behaving differently and converting in the process and changing and having a lifting or a subduing effect on some of the other compounds.
Yeah.
If you want to get the fullest expression of a hop, you actually do want some of those weirder characters that you may not like on their own. So when you're making a group blend, or you're making a, as a brewer, say someone who's taking 400,000 pounds of a single variety, you actually want some of the dankness, even though it's not something that you like in your beer. You want a little bit of that to kick it up a notch or draw it down. So you're trying to balance these concepts and these flavors together to create the character that you want.
I understand.
And so when we talk about principal components, I can look at this from a mass spectrometry perspective and be really, really focused on individual compounds and chemicals. And that's when I call Pat and go, dude, can you describe to me the flavor of a tabby cat tomcat versus like a tortoise shell?
And he gives you like the chemical compound makeup of that smell
and exactly how it interacts with your nose. Yeah, it's fun.
I see. Okay.
But in actual reality, it's okay, hang on, we find that this little amount of what is traditionally in high concentrations a negative character actually lifts the entire aroma profile of the hops, and we pay more attention to the piney, citrusy, lemony, berry flavors.
That's crazy.
In Simcoe, it's really cool. So brewers do this, and they have been doing this for a long time, and a lot of them have their own notes, but I've found that most of y'all just kind of go, I like that one, I want that one. Like, when I ask you to fill out a form, you don't do it. So now you're doing it online. we're trying to make it better. And it's just to get better data for y'all. But there goes y'all again. But the whole point is that we're trying to create something that brewers want best. And so brewers are going to do that for themselves. But when we don't have a huge amount of hops going to one brewery,
yeah,
and we've got a lot of different options for a lot of different breweries, we strive for the Peruter optimality, which is, you know, people are going to criticize me for saying this, but it's the most good for the most people.
Yeah.
And yes, I know that Peruter optimality is actually the least bad for the least people.
Well, so I get that part of it. I could see how that might be a criticism, but it's an opportunity, because otherwise these folks, you know, might not have been able to select hops at all, right? And so I'm not defending either side per se. I'm just saying that's like glass half empty kind of attitude, right?
Right.
So because I all of a sudden just became a brewer who gets a little say in the hops I'm going to get now by this blending process.
And what we have seen, and what's really interesting about this, is that we've battled with this concept because we don't want to like force people to take the same stuff. Yeah. But at the same time, we have seen serious regional differences in
brewers' palates.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So like there are like we can say, okay, within these three cities and this much population, people tend to seem to pick this stuff.
Right.
And these are all popular breweries.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It's really
cool. You guys have data sheets on that too?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
yeah.
But it's really fun.
Okay.
And but what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to, you know, as in with all the data sheets and let's just be honest, and all the toys and all the sensory and all that stuff, is we're trying to leverage this to give you stuff and I'll put lots in front of people that I'm pretty sure they're going to like, and I'm always going to put negatives in front of people that I know they're going to hate.
Okay.
And then in between then, there's going to be a spectrum of different stuff. So I'm always going to try to put more that you're going to like in front of you. But if there's something that I think, okay, you may not like this particular lot for this characteristic, but it's got this other one that you seem to really care about,
mm-hmm.
and you can then combine that in the blend. So for example, peach is a character, and melon are two characters, or cantaloupe specifically, are two characteristics that aren't in the traditional lexicon, as it were. They're just classified under stone fruit and grassy melony,
mm-hmm.
But they're distinctive. You know, they're distinctive from other stone fruit. They're distinctive from other melon, and people get really excited about those. But it's really hard to get those into beer. Actually, Lagunitas is a, was it not a little something, but it's a, what's their session something one? It's the, hell, I just put a six pack of it in the fridge.
It's little something something. No, it's the other little something.
It's baby something? No.
I don't know.
It's the white. Anyway, that has a.
You just filled my fridge with it though? I like that beer.
Oh no, that one's in my hotel room. Shit, I'll bring it tomorrow. Anyway, but it's a, that beer really expresses that peach character, and to Jeremy and to his crew, that's a really important thing. But it's not something that appears on the lexicon as normal. So we try to capture that and make sure that they're able to fill in their descriptors, and mm-hmm. then that sort of fits together, and we say, okay, anytime we get a hop that comes in on intake and we smell it, says peach, I'm going to flag that. Okay, Jeremy's probably going to like that. It might be, but I think, okay, you know, Martin from BrewDog might be interested in that as well. I think
so
Hill
Farmstead's going to be. You get to know what they like, yeah.
Yeah, and we're trying to help people get what they want and also expose them to concepts and flavors they might not know they like. They
okay.
may not have isolated, but they're like, okay, well, hang on. These compounds are kind of related. Let's put this in front of you. See what goes.
All right, I'm going to get us to a break, and then when we come back, I'm going to relate to this a little bit. I got to do an anniversary beer blend with the Rare Barrel.
Oh.
And me and some of my team got to go down and check that out, and I'm going to talk about how Jay kind of did that same thing with us to help us get to a final product that I never would have thought I would have picked. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on the Hop and Brew School podcast. Hang in there. Welcome back to the Hop and Brew School podcast. Today we are talking about blending hops and how to put hops together and get different things that you might have thought you were going to get out of them. And when you were describing this to me before the break, Nick, I thought of this experience that I had, as I had mentioned, we're coming up on our fifth anniversary here at my tap room in Concord, California, called the Hop Grenade. And Jay Goodwin down at the Rare Barrel, Jay and Alex there, had invited us to do an anniversary blend, which was just like
jealousy and score.
I mean, my favorite, sour brewery on the planet. And so really nice of them to do that. And so me and a few of my team went down to do this. And the way, you know, Jay, I love seeing friends at work sometimes. You know, have you ever have that experience where, you know, when you're with friends, you're You're having fun. You're one person. And then when you see your friend being the professional that they are, doing the very thing they were like born to do,
it's like, you're just that dude who does this stuff. And you're like, actually, you're kind of a badass.
This guy like knows what's happening. And of course, I knew that. But to watch him at work. And so he has beer in a bunch of graduated cylinders. And we sample each of these on their own. And they're from different barrels. Mm-hmm. And the reason I can relate here is that there were times when we would try these on their own, and I would go like, well, I don't like that. And then maybe another one, and I don't like that very much. And then he would sort of go away, do something, give it back, and I'd go, oh, well, that's really nice. And he's like, yeah, those are the two you didn't like. So the kind of things, like you're saying, that sometimes even the compounds that you don't like, the components you don't like, mixed with something else, turn into something else, or lift something else is, I think, even better descriptor that you used. I'm starting to understand how we can do these same things with hops based on that.
And this is really sort of the heart of, and this is, I mean, this is something that Jeremy's alluded to, and Vinny's alluded to, and well, pretty much every brewer has alluded to, which is that it's the brewer's art, and it's mm-hmm. difficult to quantify.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop me from trying, but it is, it's one of those things where you just say, okay, hang on. This just needs a little bit of foot stank.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's a terrible idea, because you're taking this bright fruity thing and then you get it and you're like, oh my God, no, it's even fruitier. And it's, again, that concept of the lifter hop, that concept of the thiols makes your brain, I've talked about the putrescence and fermentation and all that stuff, that makes your brain pay attention. But there's also, we're working on this. There may be there may be some changes, like you said earlier. But I certainly know that there are some holistic perceptual changes and effects and impacts that go on with the combination of these things.
Okay. You want to talk about some of, like, educate me on some of these actual components and changes.
So when we talk about principal components in hops, typically it's linalool, geraniol, caryophyllene, farnesene, myrcene, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Those are big. And they are the overwhelming. I mean, myrcene on its own is like 50% of most hop oils.
Wow. Okay.
It's the vast majority of it. But myrcene dissipates. It's very, very volatile. It's very thermally labile. It will get blown out during the process. It doesn't stay around very long. Geraniol on its own is floral, hence geraniums, geraniol. Mm-hmm. But it also, we have reason to believe, not proven yet, we have reason to believe that it is being converted into other compounds such as citronellol, citrol, and some nerol is just an orange oil, and it's not in hops, but it shows up in beer. Mm-hmm. And so, again, slight deviation to biotransformation. I'm going to be talking about the ASPC, and we'll have a show on that later on with some actual chemists, not just me talking my usual rants. But we are going to have some serious discussions about this, and we're doing a lot of projects on this. But we, as Charlie said on the show that was involving Jay and Vinny, hops and sour beer, biotransformation isn't necessarily so the misconception is that yeast will take up these aromatic compounds that have no real metabolic value to them,
mm-hmm.
turn them into something else, and then crap them back out again.
Okay.
And quite honestly, that's a stretch. You know, that fails the Popper's falsification, and that fails the Occam's razor, which is that just basically, if you have a hypothesis, you should try to disprove it before you present it.
Okay.
And disproving the fact that yeast would try to take something up is not that hard. They don't actually have the transporters for most of these molecules and the size of most of these molecules. Occam's razor is basically, well, hang on, we've got a very volatile environment. We've got pH, we've got pressure, we've got carbonic acid, we've got different organic acids forming, we've got alcohol forming, we've got sugars and all this stuff. Hang on, that's a perfect environment for shit to isomerize and just change shape.
Okay.
And change characteristics and change flavors. So, just side note, kind of wandered off on a rant there. But those principal components are really important, and they are the majority of hop flavors.
All right.
And however, they have been used for the last 10 to 15 years, maybe even 20, to define what hops are what. However, if you can grab a couple of lots of hops, a couple of different samples of hops and different varieties of hops that are very distinctive, and line them up and say, okay, exactly, you know, this much linalool, same parameters, linalool, geraniol, all these caryophyllene, farnesene, myrcene, and they smell completely different.
Hmm.
And it's because the principal component analysis, or PCA, is very limited. You're just looking at what shows up first and is the biggest and boldest.
All right.
There's a lot of stuff in the background that is really, really sort of defining. And so up until recently, you had to look at sensory data. And you had to have people sit around and come to agreement as to what the terms were. And depending on what culture you're from, depending on what country you're raised in, depending on what your history of flavors, you're going to use different terms. So it's just a mess.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are techniques to work that out, and we're working on those. But basically, if you sit down and say, okay, hang on, this is citrusy to me, but it's Christmas citrusy.
So now I'm picking out something even more particular.
Particular.
Yeah.
Or this is citrusy to me, but it's unripe citrusy.
All right.
And then you get, like me, I'm like, y'all, this tastes like Tang. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, hang on. We need to come to an agreement there and combine those things. So if you're trying to create a hop blend, you want to pay attention to the major compounds, the PCA, the principal component analysis,
mm-hmm.
and overall, and say, okay, we're going to keep it within these error bars, basically. But then you want to get a well-defined sort of field of options within that, where people are saying, okay, hang on, here are all the citrusy things we detected out of 200 panelists that are trained. You don't want to do random people, because sometimes it's valuable, but that can be a problem, because they're not using the same language.
Makes sense, yeah.
But out of 200 panelists, 37% said this one, 12% said this one, 2% said this one, fractionate that out,
mm-hmm.
And then sort of work through it, and you can say, okay, well, clearly this tastes like tangerine, and a version of tangerine to most people.
Okay, yeah.
So we're going to define this as that.
All right.
And then we want to create a tropical fruit salad or something. Well, you want some tangerine in there. Remember, you know, and like you can either do 50s tropical fruit salad, which is the preserved, weird, peeled tangerine slices with the stewed pear and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Or you can do like a fresh, amazing pomelo banana with sprinkled with lime and like Salt Bay sprinkling his chili powder onto it or something. And it's amazing. And
okay.
So the idea is to take those top notes. And that's all of these things that I'm talking about right now, citrus and the aromatics and all that stuff, they're the first things that you hit.
Hmm.
And so the first things that you smell are going to be citrusy,
mm-hmm.
peppery, minty.
Hmm.
But and you're going to smell some of these things later on.
Yeah.
Again, it's the overripe fruit or ethyl butyrate and so on and so forth. Those are all the most volatile compounds, and those are the things that are going to dissipate fastest. So if you're trying to make a dry hopping blend, you're going to want to put a bunch of those in there, because you want to make sure that they stick around. And mm-hmm. so and it's really a numbers game, and we're working on looking at seeing if we can figure out better ways for brewers to get better access to them and keep them in the beer.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, it's pretty much just
trying it out.
I apologize to marketing, but add a fuck ton of them, and some of them, some percentage of that will remain.
Well, because of all the variables, right? So I can understand how difficult it's going to be to pinpoint that, and it's going to take you all some time. But okay, yeah.
So
but still, err on the side of going heavy.
Err on the side of more for the volatile stuff.
Okay.
Now, then you have your mid palate and your retronasal, and so there's two. So there's a couple things. There's top notes, which is what you smell. And the first thing that hits your sensory experience or organoleptic experience of the beer or the hops when you take a first sniff or take a first sip, those are your aromatic and very volatile compounds. Your mid-palate is once you've started to sort of inhale those and they're going past your soft palate and going down into your lungs and they're going through your sinuses,
mm-hmm.
and you're swallowing the beer, you're like, okay, hang on, there's something in the middle there. And this is actually, for me, this is one of the hardest things to quantify as a brewer and as a researcher. It's like, well, hang on, mid-palate is flavor? Because there's only like six. Salty, sweet, bitter, sour, umami. Is that five?
That's five.
Okay, am I missing one?
I was thinking, I was waiting for you not to say umami, so you stumped me.
Okay, we're going to go with five. anyway, and then there's the interaction of those with the aromatics and then how that works in our brain. So now we're talking about neurology. And so that at that point, the mid palate is really complicated.
Yeah.
Because the way you experience it, your life experience plus the aromatics plus your flavor profile, that's like there are words in Chinese and Japanese for flavors that we as Westerners who've never been there and never learned those languages and had that food, we don't even experience because we don't have a concept for them, which is just cool as hell. Anyway.
See, you say cool, and I get it, but this is why I will never take the BJCP exam. I'm never going to do the Cicerone thing because it's so difficult in the middle there to like... And listen, I'll admit I'm kind of lazy, but the fact that it, it's subjective. There's so many, you know, like you started to ask, is it flavor or is it aroma? Yes. And now, and then it becomes neurological from there.
No, it becomes cultural first and then neurological.
Yeah. And so I just can't be bothered. Like, fuck it. I like the beer or I don't.
And
so, I'm still, don't get me wrong. I also find it fascinating. And I find those that are able to refine their palate to such a degree that they can really pick these things out. I do find that fascinating, and it's a real talent, I think.
Well, it's so this is a refrain that I use with my direct supervisor and some of the other C-suite. I'm like, it's not talent. It's a skill. You're not born with this.
You
can have things that impede your ability to do this, but this is practice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you have to get, like, so I have had times when, you know, I'm sweetie, I apologize for this, but when I had started smoking again and then quit and then started smoking again and quit, you know, my aptitude, my skill level
right.
at sensory decreased.
I bet, yeah.
Because, you know, I was covering my nose and ash and nicotine is not great. But when it goes away, you know, I'm much better. And this is some of the brewers I've worked with who just have smoked pretty much in the last, I mean, Jesus, I've known them for over 15 years and they just keep smoking. They're still fantastic sensory panelists, but I can't imagine what they would be without cigarettes.
Right.
This is not an anti, again, Philip Morris is no longer a sponsor. But the whole concept is that it's really, you're trying to build something that you like, and you know what you like.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to not necessarily define it, but at least put error bars around it, saying it's within the. It's not exactly what I want, but it's close enough.
Yeah.
And so you eventually your error bars will get tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, and so eventually you'll have exactly the same thing every time. And I would caution people not to I would caution people not to resort to only chemical analysis and lab specifications. Like, you want the sensory, because we just don't have the resolution or we can't typify the neurology and the human perceptual response to these things yet. So pay attention to what you smell and what you like, combine them in the way that you want, and then go from there. So wandering off here.
Now we got to mid palate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Finishing character, which is so there's this situation that happens where once you swallow something, you get there's a little bit of sensory stuff that goes on in your sinuses, and there's a little bit of stuff that goes on in the back of your throat, in the back of your tongue as it's going down, and that's frequently people are like, oh, that's astringency. No, actually, that's on the side of your tongue, but it's the nerves connect. Anyway, but you're paying attention to the sip and after you've swallowed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get the character of the beer, and then you have a void in your mouth. And your mouth is hotter than the beer. I sure hope it is, at least, otherwise you're dying. But then all of those volatile components, and you open your mouth, because there's always going to be a vacuum, or you inhale through your nose, all those components get volatilized. And that's called the retronasal, where it goes after you've swallowed, it goes back up into your sinuses, into your mouth, it saturates your taste buds, and saturates your nose. And you want to pay attention to all three of these areas. That first smell, that mid-palate flavor,
mm-hmm.
and then that retronasal And I like to add a fourth,
okay,
which is, was it good on the burp?
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I thought about that after my last sip. I was like, I was almost combining that with the finishing character.
I would say that's the epilogue.
Yeah.
The epilogue character.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah,
if it's good on the burp, and then that's we used to use that as a tongue-in-cheek, quite literally sometimes, character or quality measure is like, okay, we're kind of split. Okay, show of hands, was it good on the burp?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, because that's going to show everything. Because that's not ideal condition.
So that's your tiebreaker, is what you're saying.
Yes,
if all things being equal, your tiebreaker then
is it good on the burp?
Okay, I got you.
You know, and it's it's a little bit crass, but basically, that whole idea is that you have these layers, and they will interact with your sensory just capacity and your organs in an order,
mm-hmm.
and. What's really annoying, or wonderful, sorry,
yeah.
is that when you get all the hops together and you smell them as a raw component and you combine them together, you can be like, okay, well, okay, I want to, like, this is amazing top note citrus, but I want a bit more, I want a little bit of that tropical fruit character. Hang on, this one had a little bit of that rotting fruit character, which if I combine it with the citrus and this peach note over here, that's going to give me that tropical fruit character. Ah, but I really want to follow it up with something kind of spicy.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of that green pepper character, maybe from like a late harvest, like T90 Equinaut, or some black pepper from Autonom and some spiciness. Put them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, okay, this is the hop blend that's going to be amazing.
Okay.
A real fucker is,
mm-hmm.
you're smelling that in the hops in front of you. Now, when you put them into the hot side,
yeah,
those molecules are going to change. Some of them are going to blow off. So all the ones that you smelled are probably going to blow off. So then you have to use the same lot into your dry hop.
Okay, yeah.
And even your dry hop, you're going to get some gas exchange. So you have to learn this. You have to pay attention to this.
This is extremely annoying. Well, this is why you at Yakima and some of my favorite brewers are such professionals, because exactly what you're saying. You have to know not only what it smells like then, but what it transforms into. And you have to memorize that, essentially. You get to know these things. That's you all being professionals.
Well, I very much thank you for that. However, it's us trying to be professionals, but realistically, scent memory is very, very important for humans. Like, we pay attention to it. We remember it very hard. Like, when you smell the smell of your grandmother's house, even if you're just walking by somewhere, or the first girlfriend's shampoo,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, or the first boyfriend's cologne, or the smell of the old seats in your weird uncle's 67 Chevy.
Yeah.
They all
yeah.
bring back very, very strong memories for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's great, but they're not accurate.
Okay.
The way we remember things as human beings is that we overwrite our memories every time we recall them.
I see.
So we layer on to our experience.
Right.
The experience that we're currently having. So when you recall that perfect beer that you brewed 20 years ago, or 15 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 5 batches ago,
it wasn't that perfect.
It wasn't that perfect.
Yeah.
And you're layering all the positives. Anyway, you get
what I'm shattering my whole life's dream right now. Like, all I can remember is the past being great. And well, now you're telling me it's fucked.
Well, this, you know, the 80s had some good stuff, but there were also leg warmers and hypercolor shirts.
Right.
Well, that early 90s. Anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
But the whole point of this is that you need to pay attention. I'm trying to give you all the tools. I'm trying to develop the tools to help you all do this better. But you need to pay attention to all of these things and make sure that you learn how your process affects these compounds and how it shows up in your beer.
Okay.
So you can be very scientific about this. We can be incredibly careful about getting thiols, getting all of these these esters, and all of the monoterpenes, sesquiterpenes, so on and so forth, to the exact level. And it's still going to taste different because there's something that's even in a smaller point that's in points, you know, decimals of quadrillions that we haven't learned to look for yet, but that was actually aromatically significant. So
Well, and this is why, you know, this is a, it's almost a cliche now that we just say that, you know, brewing is science and art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, it's neither one or the other. I don't know many successful brewers that are just one or just the other, right? It is science and art to figure these things out, to use some detailed knowledge to get to a point, and then some intuition, some of your fucked up memory that you just described to me. And, you know, so it's science and art.
Well, I think this is something important to realize, is that it's there are brewers that are excellent at doing this that are just 100% science-based. And mm-hmm. anybody that knows me will say, will probably gasp when I say this. But those are the people that are making two-spec beer on a vast global scale. And it is...
That makes
sense. I take my hat off to that. It's hard to do. It's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you don't have a bunch of different esters from yeast and a bunch of different dry hop compounds to hide behind.
Mm-hmm.
But when you want to create nuance and a great palette of experience for your customers, you need to kind of pay attention to all how this all interacts.
Sure.
And then, of course, there's the opposite tack, which is... we get drunk at a bar and say, dude, we should make a beer with like
everything.
Everything. And you know, it's the kitchen sink beer or the, dude, we're going to do a collab and it's going to be as stout as 13%. We're going to use oyster shells, hope, ice cream, toasted marshmallows, and then we're going to age it in graham crackers.
I remember my first beer.
Yeah. Or, you know, honestly, sometimes, you know, I we do have this, we are trying to be scientific and awesome about it, but at the same time, we also have fun.
Well, let me do this. Let's come back and have some fun. We're going to talk about a little bit more of, you know, blending on the hop side. We got to talk a little bit about blending on the beer side. Right?
Oh, yes.
And I think that also can be some of the, you know, some of the fun part, too. Mm-hmm. Right. So hang in there. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be right back after these words. Welcome back to the Hop and Brew School podcast. Thank you so much for being with us today. So, Nick, we have talked a lot about the grower side, the Yakima Chief side, the, you know, the wholesaler side before it gets to the brewer.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously... there's the beer side of blending. And of course, it could be a whole show about how we choose what hops go together and things like that. But bridging on what you've taught us about what we do on your side, on the Yakima side, bridge that to what I do as a brewer.
Can I bridge it to what Jamil does as a brewer?
Yeah, perfect. Much better idea.
Sorry, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, much better idea.
Have you actually brewed since the last time I ragged on you about not brewing?
Gosh, no. And I'm about to give away my brew system to a lucky Brewing Network listener who goes to HomebrewCon.
Ho, ho, ho!
Well, actually, you got to go to BNA 14. But yeah, so no, I have not. No, actually.
Should we all sign it with a welder?
I am going to brew at Firestone Walker next week, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is, what is that? It's me, like, pushing a button or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll get to throw a bucket of hops in.
But. No, it's actually pretty fun, because knowing, like, Matt's on it. He knows what he's doing, and he's...
Right.
Every time I've seen him doing a collab, like, at War Pigs in Copenhagen and stuff like that, he is... He doesn't leave the brew deck. He
walks
around with the entire clipboard, and like, so a lot of like head brewers and stuff are like, okay, Minion, go do this. And like, no. He gets involved, and if he's inviting you to do a collab, you're going to be involved, which is honestly the right way to do things, and that's cool as hell.
No, I'm excited.
Anyway, okay.
On the beer side.
So what I was talking about earlier, it kind of directly translates to the beer side, but again, it's from the expression and experience standpoint. You need to know what happens when you add hops to your boil, to your whirlpool, to a hop back, to a different type of hop back if it has a greater deal of head space, because the more head space, the more aromatics you're going to lose, dry hopping during fermentation or after fermentation, all of these things matter. And your system is going to be slightly different, and your fermentation profile is going to be slightly different than what might be in the literature. And so you kind of need to just look at it and experiment. And so build on what you know. So if you have a great pale ale recipe and you know it works, use that as your baseline.
I see.
And start modifying based on that. Increase the alcohol level. It's going to behave mostly the same. Up to about, you know, between 4 and 7%, it's going to behave mostly the same. When you start getting 8 and above, you start extracting slightly different compounds and dry hops and stuff. But you want to sort of quantify all, quantify is difficult. You want to at least keep a record of all that. And I guess this goes back to what we've said probably 100 times,
yeah,
which is take notes on what was different.
Right.
And make sure that you're capturing all of this stuff. But again, you're aiming for what top notes you want people to smell. What's the mid palate? What's the experience in the mouth?
Mm-hmm.
And then what comes out as you swallow, and then perhaps as you burp, because it was a delicious fizzy beverage. Not all hops that smell the same will behave the same, or smell within the or you could describe within the same aromatic group,
mm-hmm,
will behave the same in beer. So for example, Cashmere, public variety, awesome. On the vine, or on the bind, sorry, it smells kind of lame. Once it dries, it smells like grape soda.
It's okay, interesting.
Crazy. It smells just like, it's to me at least, it smells just like grape soda. Other people have to describe it slightly different, but to me, my experience of grape soda, South America, Fanta grape soda, that's what it smells like. It's like bang on.
Right.
But in the beer, it doesn't necessarily express that way. You have to use a heck of a lot of it to get that character out, but it does provide this lovely spiciness in the background.
Hmm.
Now,
can I ask another dumb question? Based on how you're saying, I like your idea of if you like your pale ale and you're looking to do something, you know, something a little different, to use that as a base.
Mm-hmm.
Is it silly to pour myself a pint of pale ale and actually throw in a couple of the hops that I'm interested in experimenting with into the glass and drinking and smelling it and drinking it that way? Am I going to get anything close to the experience I would get if I brewed with those hops?
Well, how many beers have you drunk lately? I mean, not lately, because New England IPA is a thing now, that actually have hop chunks in the pint.
Right. It tastes like that. Sure.
Guys, hop chunks are not part of the haze. Hop polyphenols are.
Future episode.
Yeah. Anyway.
Is that helpful?
I wouldn't do it that way, because okay, you're not dry hopping. You know, the vast majority of people, some people have been dry hopping finished beer, and it hasn't worked out that great.
I see.
You do want some of the other, technical term here, schmutz, that comes with yeast that's sort of mopping up and other solids. And you actually want the yeast to glom onto some of the compounds and drop them out, because they're not going to drop out all the good ones. They're also not going to drop out all the bad ones, but they're going to drop out an even amount of those necessarily, and or not necessarily, but I guess they're going to drop out some of those, and so that can actually help clean up the flavor that you're getting. And again, that comes from experience. I don't have an answer for y'all, to be totally specific, but I would not ever dry hop
a pint of beer to see what about, like, a and I hear you saying that obviously there's so many other components, like yeast being a big factor, but
malt, acids.
So even like a hop tea then is not
hop
a...
Hop teas, again, so now most hop people who are doing hop teas are doing with water.
Yeah, that's okay. What I mean, yeah.
And the actual SOP for it originally was, or the standard was, distilled water. Mm. Like, well, hang on, there's no minerals in there.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
know that the mineral content of the water affects isomerization of alpha acids, beta acids, and all this stuff. And like, hang on, this is not representative.
So that's not accurate either.
It's
yeah.
you're gonna. It's like, okay, if you want to smell what a hop tea is gonna taste like, make mm-hmm. a hop tea.
Yeah. Okay.
If you want to smell what a dry hop beer is gonna make, just get a bunch of frickin' kegs. Dry hop each of them.
Mm-hmm.
Purge them with CO2. Fill them with beer.
Mm-hmm.
Taste them.
Okay.
That's the way to do it.
Easy
because
enough.
Because it's real easy. But then you're going to say, okay, well, hang on, at this level. And I did this for years. This is actually when I started really calling into the Brewer Network many moons ago when mm-hmm. I was in Mexico. I was brewing a ton. And it was just, I had the opportunity. I had the time. I had the system. I had the ingredients. I'm like, all right, let's just do it. I was brewing 3 times a day
mm-hmm.
and just splitting every batch into 3 to 6 kegs.
I see.
And just doing malt trials, yeast trials, hop trials, boom, 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 boom. And that's what you kind of need to do.
Okay.
And honestly, if you have a tap room attached to your brewery,
mm-hmm.
a single keg that's the same beer but dry hop four different ways, people are going to love that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, as a brewer and as a you know, person in the hop industry, I get excited by that. I'm like, oh, dude, I will definitely buy four pints.
Give me a, flight, whatever.
Yeah, I want to try these. And you know, and everybody's different. So some people, you know, ABV and all the chemical compounds have an impact, and sort of the I guess the beer specifications have an impact on dry hop extraction and on hop extraction. But basically, pick what you like. So I personally gravitate towards about a 6 to 6.5% beer as a baseline for IPA.
Hmm.
It's right in the middle, and it gives enough sweetness from alcohol, but it's not cloying. You're not going to get too destroyed if you have like four of them, but it has everything that you need to provide a good backbone to work with the hops.
Mm-hmm.
That's my taste.
Okay.
It's not everybody else. Some people focus purely on sessions, and I've had some amazing session IPAs that are fantastic. I've had double IPAs, which taste and smell wonderful, but I can't drink that many of them. So it's a style that I've kind of fallen out of love with because mm-hmm. it's just too much for me. But looking and working with all this together, you're trying to create something that is fantastic. And now here's the other thing. You don't have to do this before the beer is finished. You can actually take two or three different beers,
mm-hmm.
treat them differently on the kettle side and the hot side, and treat them differently on the cold side, and then blend them in ratios together to create a synergistic whole that is greater than the sum of its parts.
Sure. Okay.
And then you can, because you're mixing three tanks with that, you can then dry hop even more, which is always fun. It's like, oh, just add more.
You're just trying to sell more hops right now.
No, I'm not. Dude, we've talked about this. I have been very, very, very strict about not selling shit. It's fun. I mean, it's a really cool way to do it. And plus, also, if any of them has diastole issues, you can just croizen them, and then it solves it really easily.
Okay.
But that whole mix is, like you said, with Jay's, you know, sometimes a beer that has a funk to it actually improves the overall blend.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the beer that is bright and shiny is one-dimensional,
mm-hmm.
and you want something else there. It's hard to define, but you need to learn it. And sometimes that character is depth, earthiness, stickiness, woodiness, resinousness from hops, and sometimes it's cat piss.
Okay.
Just play with them.
Fair enough.
Then, of course, there's the time when you're sitting at the bar,
mm-hmm.
in your tap room, 6 pints deep,
mm-hmm.
and fuck it, I'm going to take the double IPA and mix it with a stout, black IPA. Oh, actually, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Just a happy accident.
Happy? Well, no, not really. It's a drunky accident.
I'm a happy drunk though. So
yeah, that's. I mean, we all should be. But that's at the same time. Sometimes you arrive at genius, and sometimes mm-hmm. it's also just for fun, and you just release something ridiculous. But when I was at BrewDog, James Martin and Mikkel got feeling good one night, I believe, and they released a beer called I Hardcore You. Which was I Beat You, which is Mikkel's double IPA, is high IBUs, and then Hardcore, which was BrewDog's IPA,
mm-hmm.
and it was a 50-50 mix of both, and it was better than either beer.
Wow!
And we still don't know why,
right?
But it was delicious.
That's great, though.
And it was so much fun, and they were totally different IPAs.
All right, so let me bring us full circle this time, and we introduced a word at the beginning of the episode, called clusterfugget. I'm just to be clear, folks, that is a child-friendly word. It's clusterfugget.
Mm-hmm.
There's no CK in the middle there.
No, it's just G's.
Two G's.
Two very harsh G's.
This is a real blend.
This is a real blend.
Can you tell me how this name came about? Because it sounds like you guys were having some fun with this.
Yeah. So cluster, fuggle, and nugget are three pretty classic varieties.
Mm.
And they're not super popular anymore. They all have really good characteristics on their own. Fuggles is noted for its earthiness.
Mm-hmm.
Nugget's just a pretty general, just good one.
And nice little workhorse there.
Yeah, and Cluster's noted for, I believe, it's geraniol, and it's just so like florally character. But on their own individually, they're not super expressive, but they're, again, they can become part of that moiety that lifts the either provides some profundity with the earthiness, might lift it with some floral character, or might just round it out with sort of a West Coast classic, slightly citrusy, slightly piney, just character.
Mm-hmm.
But we realized we had some acreage, and two individuals who shall not named directly, but may currently be the CEO and may have been the former CEO and is now the COO.
Okay.
No, CSO, sorry. Hypothetically,
came up with this.
May have been consuming some alcohol and came up with this.
I think it's a great name.
It's a great name. It's actually a pretty good blend. it's one of those, like, a blend that came out of being drunk and making dad jokes and puns.
Sure. I'm calling TM for you guys right now.
I think it's actually registered, but it is getting released pretty soon. We've got an English mild coming out at HomebrewCon based on it, and some other concepts to play with it. But it's a fun one. There's not a huge amount of it because it was like a dude. Let's screw around and have some fun and make a fun blend that represents. So these are all parents of some of the biggest varieties that we love.
Okay.
And so this is something to also, it's a little bit of a retro, basically we're screwing around having fun and it tasted good. And so we decided to release it. So,
well, I think that's a great place to put a fine point on this conversation because whatever you do with your blends and learning and experimenting and getting the best beer you can possibly make over and over and over again, have some fun with it.
And
beer will be better for it.
And don't get tied to your numbers. And this is, again, me saying this. Don't put yourself into a narrow pathway with blinders on. Accept the fact that there's going to be variation. Play with that. Use the variety. Use the difficulty. Make variation a key feature rather than a bug mm-hmm. of your beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so always try to be improving. And part of that is letting flavor drift a little bit. And because right now, I mean, 20 years ago, would you thought that hazy New England IPAs with this crazy fruit and all this big oat background and this thick mouthfeel would have been as popular as they are now?
20 years ago, I had my first Sierra Nevada, I think.
Right. Okay, so 10 years ago then.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Damn it.
All of a sudden, I'm old as shit.
Yeah, well, hey, me too, dude. We're about the same age.
I know.
So, I mean, it's one of those things, like, we can never tell what the beer market's going to do.
Yeah.
And honestly, I love all of the changes that are happening. So be willing to drift. Be willing to experiment. But keep records.
All right.
And don't trust your memory of the smell.
I love it. All right. Well, that's all the time we have today on the Hop and Brew School podcast. Nick, thanks so much for that education, as usual.
Thank you for hosting me, sir. It's always a pleasure.
We will be back with more, as promised. The Hop and Brew School podcast isn't going anywhere. Go to YakimaChiefHops.com. Wait, forgive me. Go to YakimaChief.com/events and find out all about the actual Hop and Brew School 2019. It's August 30th through September 2nd. I'm going to be there. Nick's going to be there. We're going to have a good time, and we're going to learn a lot more. So make sure you go check that out. In the meantime, tell your friends about your new favorite podcast.
Hey.
Share it on your social medias. Let people know, and let us know what more we can do for you. You can send us emails to hopandbrewschool@thebrewingnetwork.com. That's hopandbrewschool@thebrewingnetwork.com. We love to hear from you.
Get us those ideas. Get us some suggestions, comments, whatever. Abuses accepted, not welcomed, but definitely please, if there's a topic you want us to dive into or hit back on, bring it up.
That's right. All right, Nick, we'll see you on the next one.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much.
Take care of yourselves and your beer.